You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
I know Seahawks fans are ready. Ready to get back to Lumen Field on Sunday. Home opener. Only game in the first four that we get at home, so go enjoy it. Yes, everyone will be wearing a mask. Yes, either have to be vaccinated or you need to have a proof of a negative COVID test within the last 72 hours. So we've gone over the details. We'll do it again here a little bit later in the show. But make sure you're prepared for that. Have your mask ready and also either have a copy of your vaccination card or a digital copy of it or a copy of your negative test here. But fans back at it is so hard for me not to call it CenturyLink Field at right. Lumen Field. For some reason, the switch from CenturyLink to Lumen is much harder than the switch from Quest to CenturyLink. I think it's because I know what CenturyLink is,
and it seemed to happen during right before a game. Like the last time it was in between seasons.
I've never heard the word Lumen in any other category in any other context.
Flashlights, lumens. How many lumens?
Okay.
Headlamps.
But, like, I would have thought when CenturyLink went to the change with Lumen Field that it was going to coincide with the change of their name. But it's not. I get a bill every month from CenturyLink, and yet I have to go to Lumen Field. Anyway, Lumen Field, that's where we'll be. Second chance to see these Seahawks. We had an great opportunity watching them in week one. So much fun. And a lot of stuff looked perfect, quite frankly. A few things look significantly better. We talked about how much more complete, how much more creative the offense was, the passing game. They continued to run the ball well. The offensive line had their moments. The defense was very good, only allowing 16 points. They sacked Carson Wentz. The secondary didn't seem to be an issue. The linebackers were super fast. So it leads me to this question, and I'll answer it right away. Of all the things you saw in that game, what would you choose if you could only pick one? To be real, to last, right? To matter, to be real throughout the rest of this season. What is real? Right? It's like the bit from the Matrix. What is?
We're getting philosophical now.
Well, where's Morpheus when you need him? Right? Nobody else knows what is real quite like Morpheus. So, that's the question. You guys can answer it at 710-710, and it's powered by Mac and Jacks. I'll answer it this way: the pass rush. If the pass rush we saw on Sunday is real, I think this Seahawks team is really good.
A lot of texts about pass rush.
That, to me, is the easy answer. If we see a lot of plays like this one.
Wentz from the shotgun, has a slot near side, takes the snap, has a second, looks, gets hit, goes down. Ball's going to go back over to the Seahawks. Darrell Taylor comes in from the right side of the offense, fights right through his man. Wentz never saw him. He got hit and decked. And another sack for the Seahawks. That's three on the game and couldn't come at a better time.
If that is real, as Morpheus says, then I think this is a really good team. If we see Darrell Taylor, if we see Kerry Hyder show up, if we see Carlos Dunlap, whose sack didn't count but was clearly an impressive play on the two-point conversion. Look, it was one of the things Pete was adamant about after the game was just how many different guys played well.
I thought Darrell had a very good first game, Darrell Taylor, and we saw Benson Mayoa played really well in his role. Carlos really forced the issue. Alton Robinson did some nice stuff late in the game. He didn't get as much play time as I wish he could have got. But Rashim Green really was on fire, which he's been like that the entire camp. We moved his position and changed him, and he's totally taken to it. He gets a lot more edge play. He just looks like a terror, and so excited to see him. You know, we forget how young he is. He's still just a young kid, you know, and he's grown at it, and man, is he coming to life.
Just as a brief aside, no, we don't forget how young he is, Pete. Nobody will stop reminding us how young he is. It is the only thing I know about Rashim Green, is that he's much younger than he's supposed to be. I appreciate you continuing to remind me, but I know he's very, very young. Last thing here on why I think it's the defensive line and the pass rush specifically. That's what changed last year. More, you were mentioning sort of the halfway point of when things kind of got better for that Seahawks defense. Yeah, they played some mediocre quarterbacks, but honestly, they played some mediocre quarterbacks in the first half, too. It changed when Carlos Dunlap showed up, and all of a sudden, their defensive line was worth something instead of just allowing forever. Now, their cornerbacks are still a challenge. I can't tell you that those guys are good. I can't even tell you they were good on Sunday. But I can tell you they didn't have to cover for, you know, that long because the defensive line was able to get after the quarterback and the rotation that they had and keeping guys fresh. And I think when we add in, A, the crowd this weekend at Lumen Field, which I think is going to be nuts given just the excitement to be back there finally, and then on the other side, just the rain and the weather, which can help the pass rush as well, I would think that they're going to be a force, and I really hope that that is the thing that's real, because if it is, look, if the offense isn't real, if the creativity, you know Russ can succeed even without a good offense. You know Russell's good enough and creative enough himself that even when nothing else is good around him, Russ is still good. But you don't know, I mean, you do know what this team looks like without a pass rush. It's bad. We saw what it was last year before Carlos Dunlap got here.
Historically
bad. It was historically bad at giving up passing yards. So choose one thing to be real. It's not close for me. It's defense and their ability to rush the passer.
Text in from the 253. If one thing can be real, no delay of games because we couldn't get a play in on time.
That would be nice.
Very.
I don't know if that could be number one on my list, but it's definitely up there.
509, I want to see tempo and mixed direction all year.
Yeah. Yeah, that was definitely a good thing from Sunday.
425, skip and squim. I would pick the first possession touchdown to last all season.
No, stop. That's what you want is the That's first possession touchdown? Ooh, we're up 7-0?
I mean, it goes back to the thing that I want. I want it to be easier to win a game in the fourth quarter by doing more in the first three.
Okay, so explain.
Less of the have to have a two-minute drill. Everybody loves to see it, but it always coming down to that was something that was just not, in my mind, a sustainable way to win football games.
You're right to an extent. But I will also say, like, that's kind of life in the NFL. Most teams are pretty even. Honestly, they are.
Yeah, saw it last night.
Most teams, and in that case, both teams are not very good. In some games, both teams are pretty good. But even the difference between the not very good and the pretty good is not as extreme in the NFL as it is in some other sports. And I think what we've seen over the last few years, the way the game is with the amount of passing that's in it, the quality of the quarterbacks, the offensive systems, the rules that allow you to pass, you're never up by enough in the NFL. There's no such thing. Someone is always ready to come back. It's like the whole David and Goliath thing. The advantage of being disadvantaged. When you're losing, you can just let loose and do this, that, and the other. So even when you have a lead, it's not over. You win games in the NFL because your quarterback is better in the two-minute drill than the other team is. That's how you win.
But I agree with Justin. I don't think it necessarily has to be a lead. I think it's more not looking like one team in the first half and another team in the second, where it seems like you can barely put up points, or you're maybe not going for it in certain situations in the first half, and then all of a sudden you can't stop scoring points.
I think that's a good point. I also think that the Seahawks have shown us that they know how to win even when they don't score until late, even when they just keep it close and Russ does his thing late, because that's what it means to have a franchise quarterback like Russell Wilson.
From the 570, I would love to see one thing for Sunday's game to continue. No major injuries.
Yeah, that was good. That's a really good point. That, I mean, you know what? That actually might be the best point. That's better than any of the ones.
Because you
we've
can't
come
have any
with.
Of the other things if you do have major injuries.
Well, and this team's not exactly deep, right? I mean, we saw, you know, Maura, this kind of gets to yours. I don't want to spoil your thunder here, but Maura's answer was the offensive line.
Yes, I would like to see what we saw from them last week. There were some moments where there was pretty quick pressure, but that is a good defensive team. The Colts, I mean, were one of the best last year at that.
I don't think they put
Russell in any really bad situations. They played really well overall. He was happy with it, said he loved the offensive line last week. I would like to see that continue. I'm a little nervous that they're already banged up. We saw Damian Lewis appear on the injury report yesterday with a groin, did not practice at all, yeah. And that's a new one. JaMarco Jones is also hurt. And
JaMarco would be his backup, right? That he would be the next guy to slide in there, or is he more of a tackle?
He's more of a tackle, but Bob Condotta was seeing Jake Curran.
This guy
that they kind of, like, he had some flashes in the preseason would slot in there, which makes me nervous because we don't know that much about offensive linemen when we're casual fans, but Damian Lewis is very good. He had a quiet, really solid rookie season.
Well, and I don't even think we're sure how to pronounce Curran, whether it's Curran or Curran. So that
I will not lie to you.
There's the challenge. No, you're right. I think this is where these two points meet, right? The strength of the offensive line and needing that to be real with the need for this team to stay healthy because some of the depth issues that we saw on display during the preseason. Yeah, you're right. Damian Lewis, his third-round pick, who we saw last year for the first time, started every game, as far as I remember, And he's good. You may not know him because he's a guard, but Mark Schlereth, who you do know, he liked him a lot.
Let me tell you, he is dominant, and he's got some nasty to him. I mean, I've seen him go straight, put a guy on his back, and then go straight Earl Grey over his face mask, you know? So he's got some nasty to him. He plays that way. He's physical at the point of attack. And to be able to pop in and just play center like that, like, that is a really hard thing to do.
Yeah, that was from last year.
And that's another good point he had there. Damian Lewis slid over and played center last year. You don't want him to do that. It was not, you know, his ideal position.
I'm not sure I don't, by the way. I think the center position is so important. I'm not sure I don't want him to eventually be their center. But looked like Kyle Fuller had a better game than we had seen at times last year. Anyway, those are things that I would like to see be real. I think it's a great answer more on the offensive line. It's a great answer from the texter on health and that being a huge point. I'm really convinced that they need their defensive line, the pass rush, to be what it was. And Justin's point was terrible. I didn't see any value whatsoever to what Justin brought here.
Of course it was.
Hey, I also want to talk about the fans coming back. Can I ask you guys an offbeat question for a moment, though?
Yes.
If you're driving in your car and you need gas, okay, and you're somewhere unfamiliar, you're on a highway, and you see a sign that tells you which exits have gas, right? That's a fairly normal thing is when you're driving. And they don't always say what the distance is from the freeway. What is the maximum distance from the freeway they should be allowed to put a sign for a gas station without telling you ahead of time how far it is? What is the max distance that you think is fair?
That's a really, really specific and odd question.
No, it's not that odd.
I mean, I expect them to be within like 3 miles of getting up.
I expect them to be within 100 yards of the exit.
I mean, yeah, but like you said, the max.
Yeah, you shouldn't be forcing me to drive down to your town.
I was on Route 2 yesterday, kind of Snohomish area. And I needed to get gas. I had the light was on. I knew I was going to have to stop on the way, and I figured I would stop once I got up there. I didn't know where, but I'm on Route 2. I figured there'll be a gas station up there. And so I see services, next exit. Great, gas, Shell, whatever. Okay, so I get off the highway. And not until after I get off the highway and take the turn, so it's not like I can even get right back on, the sign says, yes, services in 2.5 miles, which to me is something you probably needed to explain beforehand. Unless the service center is right there, don't you think you owe people a little explanation that it's 2.5 miles? And it's not 2.5 miles down a highway. I mean, that could be like a 5-minute drive just to get to the service station. But here's the kicker. I got halfway there. I got like 1.5 miles down. And then the road was closed. They were doing construction.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I felt like that was a bit
should have been up first.
Well, yes. But I also think 2.5 miles is farther than should be allowed to put that sign up without a warning.
509 says within eyesight is
yes.
The only answer.
How far on Highway 2 were you?
Not that far. I was not that far. No, I was like a few miles down Highway 2. I was not that far.
All right.
I had taken the turn where like you go right to stay onto Highway 2. And then, you know, 2.5 miles. Are you kidding me? Thankfully, there was a Fred Meyer around, and I was able to get gas. So I've never run out of gas in my life. I've come close.
Oh, I can imagine you on the side of the road on Highway 2 just trying to talk to somebody up there and be like, does anybody have gas for me just sitting on the side of the road?
You mean call AAA? I know how to call AAA. I'm not, you know, I know how to make a phone call. I'm not John Clayton.
Well, you make it sound like you're stranded in the desert, and you're like, 2.5 miles.
I did almost get stranded years ago in Nebraska where I thought I was going to run. I was like, oh, next service, 38 miles or something. I was like, oh, I actually might not make it. I had to turn off the AC and all of that. It's going to be fun this weekend, man. It's going to be fun to get back to Lumen Field. Excited to have the fans back there. I will just quickly remind everyone that you need, if you are vaccinated, bring a hard copy or a photocopy of your CDC vaccination card, a printout of your Department of Health vaccine record, or you can upload it to the Clear app at clearme.com. It is free. Or for unvaccinated fans, if you are not vaccinated, you got to take a COVID test, and you better do it real soon because you got to have the results by the time you're there at 1:25 on Sunday. Children under 12 don't need either, and everybody has to wear a mask. Those are the rules. It is crazy that there's players on this team that we haven't seen, right? Like, all right, the rookies who were last year's rookies, that's not as weird to me, but like, we've not seen Jamal Adams, and he hasn't seen the fans here You remember last year how excited he was?
I want all the fans to say, praise, as soon as I come out. Like, oh, I feel it right now. I'm getting chills. Like, I can imagine him saying, praise. Like, that's that stuff I'm waiting on. I'm waiting on that. That's going to be live.
It's no wonder that Ryan Neal said yesterday that guy talked nonstop, him and Quandre Diggs. So, yeah, I mean, anybody else ready to yell Prez on Sunday? I would hope so. Do you think that'll catch on?
I'll do it at home. And, yes, I think it will.
Do you think enough people know that that's his nickname for it to catch on?
He signs his own tweets and with Prez.
Right, but like 5% of people
are on
Twitter.
Helping spread the word right now.
All right. Well,
he wants to be called Prez, guys.
All right. So, will you guys yell Prez?
Absolutely, I would.
Will you do
I'll
it right now?
I'll be in the press box. Press! I can't.
There you go. 7:15, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Prez!
There you go.
That's what people have to be yelling on Sunday. At least that's what Jamal Adams wants. The Seahawks make their home debut. First time in forever, over 600 days that we have seen a home game, regular season game at what is now called Lumen Field. Heck, they changed the name of the stadium since the last time they played there. How about that? Now, if what we saw in week one was real, there's a chance to show that was no mirage. First week that an opponent's had a chance to game plan against actual film and having seen it all, so that'll be a new challenge for Shane Waldron. Although I honestly am encouraged to see that so many players seem to believe they've only scratched the surface here. So, a year ago, it became normal watching games played in empty stadiums. This weekend, Seattle finally gets to make it seem normal again to be back in the loudest stadium in the league. And my guess is the fans will do everything in their power to reclaim that title. Hard to believe that there are, as I said, veterans on this team who've never played in front of this crowd. Jordan Brooks, Damian Lewis, Alton Robinson, just to name a few. And yes, El Prez, Jamal Adams, never played as a Seahawk in front of this crowd, so hopefully people will be excited and chanting for him. The injury report looks mostly good as you're looking for health, which is what we were just talking about. Seeing Damian Lewis's name on there is not good. He did not practice yesterday because of a new groin issue. Hopefully we will see him at least limited today and questionable by the end of the day, because that would make him likely, I would think, to play on Sunday. And he is a big deal, partly because he's been a good player, and partly because of some of the depth issues that they have had up front on your offensive line. So there you go. 125 start on Sunday for the Seahawks as they take on the Titans.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Yeah, Thursday night football last night. And every football game does get a hero. Last night, apparently, it was Taylor Heinicke's turn for the spotlight. He helped Washington drive down the field for what ended up being a late field goal. I don't know if I'm writing his Hall of Fame speech for him just yet. I think he may have a little ways to go. He did survive an interception on the penultimate drive before missing a field goal on what would have been the last play. Lucky for them, Dexter Lawrence jumped off sides. Dustin Hopkins got a second chance to make the kick, and he did. Washington beats New York in a battle of NFC East superpowers. Oh, wait, this isn't 1989 anymore. Neither team is very good. If you want to rank the three worst divisions in football, you would certainly have to put the NFC North, the NFC East, and the AFC South all in there. I will give the NFC East the edge because I think Dallas might be a decent team, but I'm not sure. I mean, they're 0-1. We'll see what they're able to do this week against the Chargers. Three of those 12 teams in those three divisions are guaranteed to make the playoffs. Three of them are in because they have to be. Those are the rules. Meanwhile, the Seahawks will have to fight it out against Arizona, LA, and San Francisco. It has been a long time since the Seahawks made the playoffs at 7-9. Some marquee matchups around the NFL this weekend: Pittsburgh and Vegas, Kansas City and Baltimore, and as I mentioned, the Chargers will take on the Cowboys.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
The Mariners pretty well have to win out. At least that's what Jerry DePoto told me yesterday. Now, I think he was referring to series. I don't think he meant they had to win literally every game this year, but it might not be too far off from that, just given the quality of opponents that are either ahead of them or right there with them between Oakland and Boston and New York and Toronto. I mean, you've really made this tough now, sitting four games behind. New York did lose yesterday. The Red Sox and Blue Jays were both off. Some of those teams will play each other, and so, yeah, some of them will lose, but unfortunately, in those same games, someone will win, and I just think it puts the Mariners in a really, really difficult position. What can they still accomplish this year, even if they're not able to make the playoffs? Well, battling to the end, I think, is important. I think they have learned quite a bit from being in contention. Both Scott and Jerry mentioned that this week, and they might as well continue to try to learn from it. Treat each game as a true competitive September affair, and maybe even after they are eliminated. Preparing for next year is important. It's also important to remember that they've been doing that this year, even while trying to win, right? They have not necessarily gone all in on this season because part of the goal this year was to develop some of their young players. I will say, Jerry Dipoto mentioned yesterday that Julio Rodriguez is, quote, on the doorstep. That could mean a Triple-A promotion by the end of the year just to get his feet wet there. Quite frankly, I wouldn't mind if I saw him in the major leagues just so he could see it, just so he could see what pitching looks like at the major at the major league level to decide and show him what he's got to work on next year, because I don't see him starting in the majors next year. But, okay, maybe he gets to see what a major league fastball looks like. Maybe he gets to see the way they pitch you in the major leagues and the way the breaking stuff works. There might be some value in there. In the meantime, they do kick off a series in Kansas City tonight. Chris Flexen goes against Brady Singer. First pitch will be at 5:10. Pregame show at 4 o'clock here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Going back to the things you'd like to see be real from Seahawks, still getting a lot of texts coming in about that. From week one, things you would like to be real.
Yes.
Use of the tight end position, helping get the ball out of Wilson's hands quick, opening up the long ball.
Yeah, I would like to see that as well. I wouldn't be number one on my list, but I thought that was a really great development that we saw in week one. And they've got two really talented tight ends, and eventually they'll add Colby Parkinson into that, who I don't know enough about him. He's tall. He's sort of a receiving, what are they calling it now? A move tight end? Is that the word they're using? The move tight end? It's something like that. Again, I try not to get into these ridiculous terms. We used to say defensive tackle. Now you have to say three technique. So he's a move tight end. Anyway, they got some guys who can catch, right? I mean, we know what Will Dissly can do. We got to see a little bit last week. Whatever it can do, must we've seen it against the Seahawks for all these years. Yeah, tight end should be a position of strength, and they should be using it.
In the text about the J.D. McKissic last night, good gosh, they said. And there was a quote after the game where he mentions Russell. I didn't quite finish that.
Yeah, I think he said that seeing Taylor Heinicke and how calm he was, it reminded him of Russell Wilson.
Yeah, his composure.
His composure at the end of the game. Well, that's a nice, he did throw a pick like right near the end of the game that against a better team might have lost them the game. So, I mean, it's composed. He also still made kind of a dumb mistake and got away with it. He also didn't get his team down that far. I mean, what was it, like a 49-yard kick that the guy missed originally before eventually they got the 5-yard penalty? So, yes, I'm glad he was calm, but I think it's interesting, yeah, that McKissic, when asked to name a calm quarterback collected down the stretch, who does he say? Russell Wilson. Now, I know Justin hates the fact that occasionally Russell has to win it in the end of the game in the 2-minute drill.
Oh, that's where it's now that I hate it?
I know. Hey, look, I know that bothers you. Your heart's not up for it, right? You know, you're going to have to give up your man card soon because your heart can't handle the difficulties
full
at the
circle.
End of games.
I'll JB weld it back together.
Your heart?
Yeah.
Does the JB weld it?
No, the man card. The man card.
Oh, your man card.
Yeah, I'll JB weld it to myself.
Got it. I thought you were going to weld your heart back together, which I think would have been even more impressive.
I'll open it slowly like your dishwasher door.
2.5 miles to get to the services? Don't you think that's extreme?
Yeah, it is.
2.5 miles.
I love a text 425. Did they check your oil and wash your windshield when you finally found the, quote, service station?
All right, the gas station. But, I mean, no, because it says services this distance. I'm quoting the sign, okay?
All right.
Look, maybe you don't know enough about the interstate highway system. Maybe you don't know how this thing is supposed to work. You know that which way even numbers go and odd numbers go.
Yeah.
Do you know about the spurs and the loops and all of that? Do you know about spurs and loops, Justin?
We didn't have highways where I grew up, man. I don't know.
All right. So, you want to talk to a guy who understands the interstate highway system. I've gone to enough AAAs. I've read through the triptychs. This is what we used to do when I drive cross country. You have to get a triptych because you didn't have a phone with a map. So don't start questioning me when it comes to highway services and the appropriate terminology there.
I'll let you have that.
That's my wheelhouse.
That's your world.
That is my world. That is my wheelhouse. All right. The All-Star game is coming. This is news 3 days in a row. This is great how long we've milked it. We had the day that we got it from Jeff Passan. Then we got the day they announced they were going to make the announcement. And then yesterday we actually finally had the announcement. We've been talking about this forever. And finally we know that it is coming in 2023. Rob Manfred saying so yesterday. How well will the Mariners be represented? I've got 8 names. At least 2 of them don't play for this team now. I'll tell you who they are next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Even if it has been a three-day story, it's worth it, man. I am really excited about the All-Star Game coming. Excited about the spotlight on our city. Excited about the spotlight on our stadium. And excited about the spotlight on our team, which I think should be in really good shape here in two more years. I mean, that is right in the heart of the competitive window. Some of these young guys should all be up. I think they will be spending money. And my guess is that they are really in competition for a World Series spot that year. At least that's the way this is supposed to go. So pretty cool timing to have the All-Star Game coming here in two more years, 2023.
I didn't know this yesterday until I heard, I think I saw it on King 5, that they're putting $50 million or something down into either the stadium or the neighborhood.
Into Soto. And you know, they're going to need some of that. I think there's going to be a lot of cool stuff going on in that area. We've heard about this forever, obviously, that, you know, the redevelopment of Soto. Some of that needs to go towards cleaning up some of the homeless issues that are over there so that it is, you know, in shape for the country to be looking at Seattle. Let's be clear and honest about it. Maybe they could use some of that money elsewhere in Seattle. I don't know. I live in Green Lake, and there's a couple of problems near me as well. If somebody wants to spend some money over there, that would be fine with me also. Ballard seems to have a problem or two, and, you know, there's a few other spots around Seattle also. But I also think that, the Mariners, I think they took over the Pyramid Brewing spot. I mean, they have some areas there that they're really trying to turn into a whole lot more than are there right now. And that's the area of the city where development is really possible. So $50 million is not going to get it all done. But, yeah, continuing to improve that area before the All-Star Game, I think, is great.
Yeah, the Pyramid spot is that so much potential in that
building. So much potential, right? And then where Henry's was, I mean, there really are spots there where if they could do it right, there's no reason that couldn't be one of the special places in Seattle and in the city. But
There's a new spot where Henry's was, actually.
Tony V's, I believe.
Oh, yeah, I heard that. I haven't been over to see it yet. Is it exactly the same as Henry's?
I haven't been in it yet. I only saw the signs. I haven't actually
There's a restaurant slash bar you have not been into.
I know.
Shocking.
I'm embarrassed.
But I'm sure you know at least one of the people who works
there. I'll walk in and see somebody I know.
I'm sure you will. So who's going to be on this team? Who will be there when it gets to 2023? As we know, the Mariners had, what, 8 All-Stars in 2001? Let's just assume that they are as good as they were that year when they won, you know, a record number of games in the history of baseball. The assumption is the Mariners will be just as good in 2023. So shall we look into the future?
23.
We really went...
blew the budget out on that
one.
Yeah.
Wow. Nice job, Justin.
All right.
Here we go. You ready? Here's my 8. Number 1, I will go with a non-Mariner right now. Marcus Semien. They will sign him this offseason to a gigantic contract because he's going to finish the year as arguably one of the best players in baseball. And this was supposed to be the sort of under-the-radar guy. Everyone's going to spend the money on Correa or on Baez. And he's going to sneak, or on Trevor Story, and he's going to sneak through because he wasn't playing shortstop this year, and you can get him for a little less. No, he's been ridiculously good for Toronto. So, I say this with a little trepidation that he's not going to be a Mariner, but the first guy on my list would be Marcus Semien. We know how good he is. We saw it against the Mariners.
Here's the windup and the pitch. Semien a swing and a drive deep to left field down the line, and this one is gone into Edgar's Cantina.
Yeah, we saw more than enough of Marcus Semien, as is the rest of the league this year. So he's number 1.
I don't hate that pick at all. I love seeing Marcus Semien.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yes.
He could be your third baseman next year. He hits a similar number of home runs to Seager. He's younger. And oh, by the way, he gets on base more. So yeah, sign me up for Marcus Semien.
So that was one of your 8?
Yeah.
Do you want to continue with yours?
Oh, do you have them also?
No.
Oh, okay, then sure.
Let's see who else you have. So I have another prediction.
You're the psychic on the show.
If that's the case, then yes.
I have another year 2023.
Like Karnak,
I just don't want to interrupt your flow.
All right, well, we'll flow here. Number 2. This one's going to be a surprise. You don't even remember this guy's on the team. He's going to be an All-Star in 2023. Evan White.
Oh, yes.
Evan White is going to come back. Why is he playing first base, you ask? I'll tell you in a moment. But Evan White comes back to be an All-Star in 2023.
Here is Evan White with a swing and a fly ball deep to left field. Calhoun going back, looking up, and this one is gone.
We're going to need to see more of those, for sure, than we've seen so far. He's going to have to make contact, which is something that he struggled with.
That would be a plus.
Yeah. And stay healthy.
Defense is ready, just so you're right.
I'm just saying, I'm just telling you. He's already been a Gold Glover. He's going to come back. He's going to live up to the potential. He's going to have a monster year that year. That may not be, a whole career, but that year, Evan White will be great. And why is he playing first base? Because you have traded Ty France.
Oh.
For your third All-Star. Germán Márquez.
Oh.
I hope Jerry's listening.
Gotta have an ace. Gotta have an ace. Go after the kid from Colorado.
Here's a swing and a line shot to left field on the run. Tapia reaches out and he makes the catch in the left field corner. And that will retire the side. What a catch by Ramil Tapia to end the inning. 15 in a row. Retired by Germán Márquez.
Just 15 in a row.
No big deal.
No biggie. So Germán Márquez is your third all-star after you trade for him. You got to have an ace. You're going to have to trade for somebody like that. And there weren't a ton of them on the free agent market.
And so. Ty really upped his stock.
What are you going to do? Good player. Like him. But you got Evan White. He's going to be an all-star. And you got to deal Ty France.
Okay.
Sorry. Sorry, Ty. It was nice knowing you. Looks just like Gary Woodland, by the way, if you know who that is.
So that's three of our eight.
Yep. Number four is Mitch Haniger. They sign a deal sometime next year during the season, maybe even leading up to the season. They give Haniger what he's worth, and he has another 30 home run year in 2023. So Mitch Haniger becomes your fourth all-star. Number five is Logan Gilbert. You saw like a taste of it this year, and my guess is next year he's good but not all-star caliber. But by 2023, he has a really good season, and Logan Gilbert, who's not the ace necessarily of your team. You've got Germán Márquez, but he as your number two pitcher, is that good. I think the strength of your team that year is your rotation. So not only do you get Logan Gilbert, but I'll say George Kirby is an all-star then also.
Okay.
Starting pitchers. That's going to be the strength of this team, is the young starting rotation. So Márquez, Gilbert, Kirby, all on the all-star team in 2023. Number seven, Abraham Toro.
I like that, too.
Yeah, I know you do.
Or is what we heard during Cal Raleigh's mic'd up segment, Ab.
They call him Ab. Nice Canadian guy. He's from Montreal, Quebec, somewhere like that.
Abraham Toro. Yeah, I like that call.
Yeah, Abraham Toro. He continues to grow into it. Huge on base year. Works with Perry Hill over the next few seasons here to become a much better fielder than what we've seen so far. Abraham Toro. Surprise. He's not going to start the All-Star game, but he's there. He's a backup.
Okay.
He's a reserve.
That's seven?
So that's seven. So that gets me to the last name on this list. There are two players that have been most credited with being the future of the Mariners, the two biggest pieces, the two top five prospects, and there's only room for one of them on this list. You may think that I would go with Julio Rodriguez, but
yes,
I'm not.
Yes.
Because Julio, while I don't think that he will struggle or anything close to it, I just don't think he'll have had enough time in the league. It takes time. And I don't think in what would then be his...
Potentially second? One and a half?
Potentially, yeah, one and a half. I just don't think he's ready to be an all-star that year. 2024, yes. 2023, no. By then, the best player on the Mariners, an MVP candidate in 2023... is Jake Fraley. No, it's Jared Kelenic. Sorry.
I was like, cue the angry text.
Jake Fraley will by then. Sorry. No. Oh. No, it'll be Jared Kelenic. He's my eighth choice.
All right.
I know everyone's mad at Kelenic right now. Chin up. He's getting experience, and by 2023, he will be the MVP candidate, an eighth all-star, starting in center field or maybe left field. Let's go left field.
Okay.
For your Mariners.
I don't see our rookie of the year on here anywhere.
Kyle Lewis? No, he's part of the Márquez deal.
Okay, he is.
Yeah,
ooh.
It's Ty France and
so
Kyle
Lewis.
You
traded Ty France and Kyle Lewis.
Yeah,
right.
And probably Emerson Hancock. Sorry.
Ooh.
Well, I want a Márquez.
Cutthroat.
Yeah.
It's not cutthroat. It's not that I don't like those guys. I want Márquez, and I'm ready to go. So, yeah, I unfortunately had to trade Ty France, Kyle Lewis, and Emerson Hancock.
Okay.
And I like those guys. I'm sorry. Nothing personal. I just, you got to have an ace, and Márquez was the chance.
509 says, how dare you?
Yeah. How dare I what?
Probably a lot of things.
How dare you? Brock Heward coming up next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Brock and Salk.
Brock Heward is my hero.
Every morning at 745 and 930.
Brought to you by Precor Home Fitness.
On the Mike Salk Show.
What Brock Heward says, no, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts. Yeah!
Yeah! Yeah! All right, always happy to have Brock with us. Today on the phone, he's getting ready for a big game, and I don't think they have the ability. Do they have internet on the Palouse?
You watch your mouth. okay? This place was good to you, Michael.
I know, I like it there.
Wonderful, this was a wonderful weekend.
I do like it there.
All right, I'm gonna walk by the RV lot here in a moment.
Nice.
Gonna watch a little practice that got pushed back.
Okay.
They've got a beautiful, I'll send you, I drove by it yesterday on the turnoff on the highway. I pulled over on the highway to the final pull into Pullman. They burned into the grass a beautiful Cougar logo with welcome home.
Nice.
It is. It's gorgeous. And if you were here, you wouldn't be saying things like that.
No, yes, I wouldn't. I like it there, but I can still make fun. I was trying to make fun of you. I know some places closed down. Is the place with the calzone still there?
Oh, I had that last night. Stella's. Had a gourmet calzone, add chicken, artichoke hearts, pesto, chicken, cheese.
That place is legit.
Didn't eat anything else after that.
That place is legit. I really like that place. That place is pretty legit. Brock, talking Seahawks here, and this question that I asked to start off the show today. If you could choose one thing that you saw on Sunday from the Seahawks to be real, to last, what would it be?
Oh, there's no question. It's stopping the run. I mean, I know that's every defensive coordinator, like the one I chatted with yesterday, the one from Wazoo that I will talk to later today. I mean, they all say the same thing. I was listening to Paul Moyer yesterday on with Bob and Dave on my drive over or from the airport down. And, you know, just talking about that component of it. That was real. I mean, Jonathan Taylor averaged 5 yards a carry last year. The Colts were an excellent running team. They knew their weaknesses at wide receiver. Frank Reich's won a Super Bowl. He's a good play caller. And they made them one-dimensional. And that will come into play enormously this weekend. But it will come into play in your two matchups against the Rams. You know, we've watched Todd Gurley. We watched the little rookie last year run for 100 yards in the playoff game. We have watched when teams, Mike, have been able to run the football and be two-dimensional. This defense doesn't work. Very few defenses work in the NFL. So I hope Al Woods and Puna and Dunlap and a rejuvenated Rasheem Green, a Jordan Brooks, a Bobby Wagner plays downhill and physical this weekend. Like, I'm at my eyes on 54 a lot because, you know, this was a game early in his career he would circle and say, King who? King Henry what? And he would want to splatter him. I want to see some splatter shots from Bobby, and I want to see that defense stopping the run continue to be very real.
It's interesting. You go similar to me, but I don't think anyone answered that even by text. I went defensive line also, but I just said the pass rush because I saw what it looked like last year when they didn't have a pass rush in the first half of the year, and they were historically bad.
Yes. I think if you were in a lot of other divisions, I would probably say that. Mm. In this division where San Francisco runs the ball, where LA runs the ball, where Kyler Murray can create and run the ball, and even Cliff Kingsbury's done a pretty good job when you look at him in his evolution out of some air raid principles and into actually some pretty creative run game. So in this division for these guys, and I think it's a premium, and in particular in this matchup, with a team that's lost. Here's what happens with the Tennessee Titans team and Mike Vrabel that gets embarrassed at home week one. They go back to basics. Okay, they look at each other Sunday night, Monday morning. They're in there at 4:30 in the morning saying, all right, that can't happen again. Whatever we did, all the stuff that we had in, all the different defense, all the cute little offensive plays with a new coordinator, no. We get back to who we are and what we are. We move people. We're on the road. We're going to try to shorten this game by running the football and running it right at them again and again and again. They're a little bit undersized in some spots, but they're fast, and we are going to run at them. So, Ugo Amadi, Marquise Blair, buckle up your chin strap because they're going to be running at you this weekend.
Good. Well, I would love for Marquise Blair to have a good game. I mean, he didn't do much. He didn't need to do much in week one. He's somebody I would love to see kind of ascend. By the way, you're being reminded it's Sellas, not Stella's. So there you go, Sellas.
Oh, I'm sorry. Stella, that was my late cat. I'm sorry.
Your
that
late
eaten,
cat.
That was eaten by a coyote and left in pieces. And, sorry about that.
Sellas.
Yes,
there you go.
Not Sellas. Sellas.
Another text here saying, Brock's so mad at the Huskies, he's now jumped ship. Go Cougs. Is that what's happened? Is that why you're there?
No. But I did take a look. Do you know who they play this weekend, the Huskies, Salt?
I do. They play the Arkansas State Red Wolves.
Yes. Do you know how many points the Red Wolves have scored in two games versus Memphis and some directional school?
A directional school? I would assume they scored a lot if that's the case.
I think they scored 95 points.
Yeah.
I think they scored 45 in the opener, and they lost to Memphis 55-50.
Yeah.
So, 17-point favorites, do not understand that, or whatever that number is for the Huskies. That makes no sense to me whatsoever. And if they lose this one, I may just be out. I mean, I don't even know. It may just be a nope, not going there. Next question.
Well, you won't talk about it?
I'm not doing it.
What do you mean you're not? You won't talk about it if they lose? You're going to go, remember that guy, Derek Bell, Operation Shutdown? Is that what you're going to do?
No, but if I was seeing red last week, I don't even know what this week. I don't even know if that were to happen, they go 0-3. And by the way, John Wilner, pretty esteemed writer, been doing a long time at the Mercury News. We've had him on before. Great guy. Probably someone, if you want to talk college football on the West Coast, is right at the top of my list. He's got the Huskies, as far as his projection go, finishing 11th in the conference this year.
Oh, that's 11th. A little different from Ryan Leaf, who had them undefeated.
yeah, he did. That was close. That was a close one.
A little off on that one. What
do you want me to do for you? Do you want me to pick you up anything this weekend? What do you need from over here?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I'll take some Cougar Gold, obviously. I mean, if there's Cougar Gold to be had, I would never say no. The cheese curds that they have there are not bad either at that little Cougar Gold shop. Pridemore took me over there. When I left there last time, I think I left with two cans of Cougar Gold and some curds, and there was some Cougar wine that was there. I mean, like, it was such a phenomenal time there. I also left not feeling very good. So, you put all those things together. It was quite a weekend that we had, Brock.
Well, I think I'm going to try to pop into the Coug late this afternoon. Okay. If any Cougs are on their way over here and want to say hello, I think I'm going to – I got two of my good buddies here. My two Steves are with me.
Oh.
And I think we're going to try – I think we're going to try to pop into the Coug for a little bit in between meetings this afternoon.
So the fake Graham from Carnation is there with you.
Yes. That's exactly right.
Well, make sure you say hi for me. It'd be nice to see him. All right, buddy. Thank you. We will enjoy your game on Saturday. Enjoy getting to watch the Seahawks with fans in the crowd on Sunday, and we will talk again Monday morning.
And go Seahawks.
Oh, with Brock, they say you're so mad you're seeing crimson. Oh, my gosh. That's just not right. This is too much. Let Brock go. It's too much for him today. He's seeing crimson. There's Brock Heward joining us as he does every day at 7:45. Now, I'm a little nervous to do what we're going to do next because every time I talk to our next guest, I end up seeing red. There's very few people who get under my skin like G. Scott does, but he's going to stop by and probably rile me up next on the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.